Based on recent unsolicited feedback from listeners, we are making some changes to the format of the podcast. This episode will be the start of the new format for Brainstorm Brewery. Enjoy.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
This is Brainstorm Brewery, episode 95. I'm Marcel, along with my co-hosts, Corbin, Ryan, and Jason. So we're going to start off with reading the winners from MTG Stocks this week. Jason, what are the top five cards for this week?
The top five weekly winners on MTGStocks.com for the last week are as follows. Autumn Willow is up 197.4%. Negate is up 116.8%. Teferi's Puzzle Box from 6th edition is up 66.0%. Teferi's Puzzle Box from 8th Edition is up 57.4%. Ancient Tomb from the Vault's Lands is up 41.5%. That concludes the weekly winners.
We also had losers of the week. Corbin, do you want to read off the losers for this week?
I will do that. The losers this week are Grave Pact from 8th Edition, which is down 21.8%. In the Eye of Chaos, a rare from Legends, is down 16.2%. Old Man of the Sea from Arabian Nights is down 13.6%. Ghostly Prison and Myocloth are both down 10% this week.
Thank you, Corbin. Thank you for that reading. Now let's move into Picks of the Week.
Time for the Pick of the Week.
So I want to talk about my Pick of the Week. My Pick of the Week is Time Walk. It's on the reserve list, and the way that prices are going, it's only going to go up. So I would pick up Time Walk.
My Pick of the Week is Food Chain. Food Chain was recently featured as four copies in a deck that was top eight of an SCG Open. I think that deck is very good, and that's why it got top eight of an SCG Open. You should definitely buy Food Chain.
My Pick of the Week is Master of the Pearl Trident, because I like Merfolk.
And my Pick of the Week is Foil Shamble Shark, because I'm buying them all. It's something I've proven, so that I can move the market by buying a ton of something.
So we're going to move on into a new segment. This is a segment that a lot of people ask us. If they had a certain amount of money, what would we buy? So Jason, you're going to start us off. If you had $20, what would you buy with that $20?
I would buy two Astral Cornucopia, four copies of Chromatic Lantern. I would buy five copies of Prophet of Krufix, and I would buy seven copies of Temple of Malice.
That seems like all of those will probably go up. Interesting, Jason. What about you, Corbin? What would you do if you had $100? What would you buy?
I would buy 20 copies of Silvergill Adept, because people play Merfolk, and I like Merfolk.
That's a solid point. Let's move on to our financial guru, Ryan. What would you do if you had $1,000 to spend? What would you buy?
I would go out and find a nice $800 collection, count my profits, go buy some steak, maybe a couple packs of cigarettes and a case of beer.
That sounds like all value right there.
Ryan, nobody wants to hear about what you would eat or drink if you had $200 extra.
That's true. But you know what people do want to hear about? People want to hear about the price of Duel Lands, because Duel Lands are going up at a steady pace, and everybody should know this.
I think that they will continue to go up at a steady pace.
I have no argument there, and there's no reason to continue on this conversation. So thank you. Tune in next week. This is Brainstorm Brewery.
Adios.
Goodbye.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Did you really make new show notes?
Yeah, he did.
No, I made show notes before I got on, and I was going to link them to you guys, and I was like, oh, I'm a few minutes late. I'm going to have this shit ready to go. But then you already had them.
You did not. You just linked old show notes.
That link is still the old show notes.
It said episode 92 in it still, and it was blank.
I know.
Don't lie. I clicked that link. I was the only one brave enough. I know what happened. Don't lie to me.
Blake.
You don't understand. I never actually put anything on them until we get on here. But
yeah, so don't make it sound like you saw this prep work is what I'm saying. You literally took a link that was probably already in the chat window and just relinked it.
No. I went to episode 91 on Google Docs and I deleted the episode 91 stuff, and then I put a 2 at the top.
Yeah, but you just said, like, literally a couple minutes ago that you were going to come in here all prepared with notes already written.
Yeah.
We're not even on episode 92. We're on episode 95, apparently.
But you didn't show up. You showed up with notes, with no notes, and then you blanked out some notes and then said, hey, we're going to show up ready and prepared, but where's the ready prepared?
Waiting on you now.
Waiting on Marcel.
Well, welcome, everyone, to the After Hours, Brainstorm Brewery After Hours. This is the cast that you really don't want to hear. April Fools. Is that a good start?
Yeah, April Fools.
Yeah, even the part where you asked us if that's a good start, you should leave that in. And I know you will, because whenever I ask you to take something out, you don't. So I'm assuming that you're not going to do it for yourself either. So let's roll. Let's do this. Brainstorm Brewery, episode 95, After Hours.
In before everyone says they like the first episode better, the fake episode.
Yes. Well, we listen to people. There's feedback saying people didn't want to hear our personal lives, and there's way too much of that in the beginning. Our personal thoughts is if we didn't have that, we're not going to have fun podcasting. But there are some things that we can do to tighten up the show. So we listen to everyone's feedback. Thank you for that. We're going to still do Brainstorm Brewery. It's still going to be all that you want. But we're going to bring you great guests. And this week, we got a guest that I'm pretty sure everyone's heard of, or they know him as the MTG dad, the husband of Miss... Why can I not say her name?
She's my wife, so she's a missus.
Sorry. I'm actually very bad with that. So it is the husband of Mrs. Wait, hold up. Am I really that bad?
Yeah, you really are.
Ellie is Mr.
Good thing her name isn't Michaeloth, and you'd never be able to say it. He's married to MJ Scott, everybody. Be jealous. I know I am.
Yay. Oh.
Well, welcome to the
thanks,
show.
Thanks, Jason.
No problem.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you. If people haven't heard, he's definitely the guy that I remember when you stuck out to me was you called Craterhoof Behemoth, and you kept showing us how you were able to do that with Lingering Souls and Craterhoof Behemoth, and you were doing all this damage. I was like, this guy knows what he's doing. He was really trying to make the seance work. So he was ahead of the curve. He was on that junk reanimator.
Sweet. Wow, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. That was good times.
Yeah, you kept tweeting this with the pictures. You're like, look what I'm doing. I'm doing 150 damage. Smashing face.
Man, I want to go look at those pictures now. Sounds like a lot of fun.
So where do you fit into this? You told everyone that you you're basically a player and you're trying to make your collection as cheap as possible. You're kind of like in the same boat where I'm at.
Yeah, Marcel. I think you and I pretty much the same in terms of, you know, mostly a player, not a dealer. Don't have any aspirations to open a store or anything like that. But you know, looking to build my collection. I've been working on getting into Modern over the past, I guess, 2 years ever since the format was announced, and pretty much got there. Finished my playset of Tarmogoyfs a couple weeks ago and kind of have every Modern deck now and don't know what to do next. So I guess I'll figure out what I want to do from here on out, but mostly just looking to use MTG Finance to build my collection and have whatever deck available that I want to play without spending a whole bunch of cash.
So let's talk a little bit just about that. Like when you were starting out, you know, you come in with this goal of, I want to get into Modern. I want to be able to play whatever I want in Modern, and that means Fetchlands and Tarmogoyfs and Archbound Ravagers and you know, just everything. So, you know, talk about MTG Finance. What concepts, I guess, did you use to, you know, to kind of work towards that goal?
Well, I guess I came back to Magic after a 10-ish year hiatus in Shards of Alara block. And so I had my full set of fetches from Zendikar block from Standard. And then when they were talking about Modern being announced, I have a 3-year-old son who's about to turn 4. So I think actually, just to show how awesome my wife is, I went to the Rise of the Eldrazi pre-release on, I think it was 2 days before our due date for our son. And, she let me go. Thankfully he waited a little bit to join us. So I got to do that and get a little bit of Last Magic in before becoming a dad. But,
I'm sorry, I got to interrupt. I'm not impressed. If she had gone with you, that would be impressive.
You know, I was going to cast Eldrazi at the pre-release. We didn't want any to actually physically emerge.
There you go.
Yeah, at the LGS. Yeah.
You mean Eldrazi spawn?
My son is not a 0-1. Thank you very much, Marcel.
Oh, yeah, no, so, it's annihilating.
So having a, you know, so being a dad, you know, I work full time. I've been working the last 3 years on getting my master's degree at the same time. So don't have that much time to get out to play. So there's no chance of me keeping up a standard. And so as soon as they started, you know, rumbling about modern, with Gavin working on overextended and building that, I knew what format I wanted to play because it was going to be the most accessible eternal format to me, coming back to the game. So I've pretty much had my eye on modern ever since it was announced, and I've been working towards trading into the format ever since.
Yeah. So basically you just got there through trading your way, you know, I assume, you know, standard cards or rotating cards, that sort of thing, and into modern cards. Is that just kind of the approach you took?
Yeah. You know, I use just about every technique out there. I don't have a storefront, but, you know, Puka Trade's only maybe a year old, but it's a fantastic resource if you're just trying to keep up with rotation and keep your collection afloat so you're not losing value on standard stuff. It's a really great resource for anyone out there who's just mostly a player who just wants another outlet to trade. I don't get out to the store that much, so it's really handy to have a trading site to use that's reputable. And then, you know, I buy list occasionally. I mostly buy lists for store credit just because I'm looking to build my collection, and that extra multiplier goes a really long way when you're just looking to turn cards into more cards.
Right.
So, you know, anytime, if you're just looking to build a collection, if you can buy list your cards and get that, you know, 25%, 30% multiplier on there and get pretty close to retail value on your cards and store credit, do it. If you're not using the card, just let them sit. Let that store credit sit and then just wait for a good opportunity when you can get close to doubling up. And that's pretty much been my philosophy, is just to try not to spend money on stuff that you're not going to use in the long run. And, you know, just look for opportunities to get on underpriced cards and wait until they go up. And then, I don't know, buy low, sell high. It's the same, whether you're in Magic cards or any other industry trying to make money that way.
Are you one of these evil speckers out there that everybody hates, and you're buying up all the cards and hoarding them and making Magic go up in crazy prices?
I don't think anyone's evil. I think, you know, sometimes people feel, I don't know, most of the hurt around people getting upset on missing out on a spike has been just the frequency and then the speed at which the spikes have been happening lately. And I don't know, you know, if you're really speculating on something long term and it takes 6 months or a year or 3 months or even just a couple weeks for the gains that you're looking for that to happen in that card to be recognized, no one's really going to get upset about it. But when you condense it to a short time frame, people feel like they can hold both of the values, the lower value from a couple hours ago or a day ago, and the new value in their head, and it feels like they were getting ripped off. That discrepancy over a short time frame feels like it just wasn't an equal trade or an equal transaction. But, you know, market prices are set by the market, by multiple transactions happening over time, and things can change really fast. And any, you know, market price is set by any number of transactions between two people who are agreeing to a price, and things have been moving fast lately. So I hope I'm not evil. I've hit on some, you know, really silly standard pre-order specs. I got in on like 50 Gyrus Ages just reading. I actually misread the card before I pre-ordered it. And then it got some traction at a standard pro tour. And I got out by listing at maybe $4 to channel Fireball, and I had pre-ordered them for $1, which is about as good as you can ever expect to do trying to spec on a pre-order card. So I was pretty happy with that one, but you know, they don't always pan out. But in terms of short-term stuff, I mean, everyone, as soon as a modern card, gets play and gets coverage lately, everyone's going to go buy that card, and then prices are going to move within hours. And that's when people feel like they're getting ripped off if they sold a card that moved in price over a couple hours, and then maybe they don't want to send it to you in the mail.
Right. So, okay. So here's a question I have for you, you know, maybe not strictly related to Magic or modern or trading, but you have a kid, you have a wife, you have a job. How do you actually make time to play Magic? Cause this is something that I think a lot of us struggle with. Do you have any tips? I mean, do you have anything that works for you guys, especially with your wife, you know, being into Magic as well? You know, how do you guys make it work? How do you find the time and the balance?
You know, I think anyone who who's married or who has a family knows that everyone makes it work however their schedule allows. And so, you know, everyone's work situation, family situation, childcare situation, all their schedules are different. And so I think everyone's unique. For me and MJ, you know, we talk about Magic in the middle of the night after the kid goes to sleep. Whenever we can get childcare and get a little bit of time when the kid's with, grandma and grandpa somewhere, you know, we'll jam some games and, you know, we're just mostly playing modern, you know, testing matchups with each other. And that's a lot of fun. And then, you know, every couple of weeks or a month, I'll try to get out to the LGS and actually play some, competitive Magic, but also just, you know, playing with buddies, doing whatever I can. But I get out to the store to play maybe once every 3 weeks or a month. It's probably averaging around there.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And then you just have to, you know, kind of find the time and what works for you. I mean, cause I know just the adjustment for me going from, you know, being in college, being single, playing every Friday, playing every pre-release, traveling to as many things I could, you know, to getting a job and getting married. I'm happy if I make FNM, you know, once every month or every 6 weeks at this point. So
totally.
But I mean, as long as you still find a way, I think, to keep yourself involved, you know, you guys, like you say, you find a way to do it. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. You know, Twitter is kind of the Magic lifeline for both of us too, because if you can spare a couple of minutes to check your phone or run to the computer, you can get your Magic fix. I mean, every Magic player knows it. Like, you're thinking about Magic cards all day long, whether you're at work or you're going to sleep or something. So, I mean, really, no one ever stops playing Magic. You're playing Magic in your head, even if you're not shuffling up cards or you're on mode or anything.
Well, I think one of the interesting stats I saw from Wizards, Hasbro's annual report last year is that the average player lifetime with Magic, which they measure, you know, just from the first time you pick up the game, probably the first time you buy something, you know, to the last time you buy something, is the average is like over 8 years. Which is, you know, kind of crazy when you think about it, especially when you consider that a whole lot of those people who have been playing more than 8 years are still playing. So, you know, can bring the number up. So yeah, it's kind of that whole, once you start, you never really get away from it.
Yeah.
You can take 10 years off and come back and the game is still here. That's the crazy thing. If you took 10 years off the Zatch Bell card game, guess what? Like, it's gone for 9 years when you come back.
The what?
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Like every anime show, every cartoon, everything had its own card game for a while there, and you know, you come back to Magic and it's still here, the game's still fun, you got a little bit of a learning curve. You know, I talk to people who come back after 10 years and like, oh, what's a Planeswalker? And then, you know, they're caught up. But, you know, I mean, I've been playing for 18 pretty much the whole time. That's crazy to me. That's a majority of my life I've been playing. It's pretty insane. It kind of speaks to the fact that this is the best game ever, that you can take 10 years off and then not even miss a majority of the time the game's been around.
I don't know the best game ever, but it could damn near be there.
Name a better game.
What are you talking about, Marcel?
Chess could be considered better on some scales.
No, the social aspect of chess is completely lacking.
Devoid.
I mean, there's a community that comes to this that it's just different. I mean, I've been around chess people and this is a very, very different experience. And then I took what was my hobby and turned it into a career because of this game.
Yeah, but I mean, on a global level, chess is one of the more successful games, and strategically it has proven itself over time.
It's a more strategic game, but I don't believe it's a better game overall.
Well, I also don't think I don't think the comparison for Magic is chess. I think the comparison for Magic in the sense that we're talking is something like StarCraft.
No, I would actually say your comparison is probably closer to poker.
Well, yeah, we're talking about the context of games and how long they last and the stability of them. Because if you think about the most popular video games, like you look at StarCraft 1, you know, now it's StarCraft 2 10 years later. You look at Dota, which was the big one a couple years ago. Well, now it's League of Legends, or, you know, everything just changes. I can't really think of other games.
Counter-Strike.
Yeah, like other games that aren't games that have been around since the beginning of time or whatever, like chess, you know, like commercially produced games. Don't, you know, you can't come back to them after 10 years and you just slide right back into the groove. I mean, cause the world moves on from other stuff.
I'd be very sad if Candy Crush was here 15 years from now.
Right? Yeah, like nobody cares about Flappy Bird 2 weeks later, you know.
But I mean, that's also the other beautiful thing about Magic is Magic can be whatever you want Magic to be. It can be playing once a month at your LGS. It can be playing at home with, you know, your family or your friends. It can be playing on the Pro Tour. And that really sets it apart from a lot of other games because exactly. There's a certain point where, like, you know, you play StarCraft. Yeah, you can get online and play a game every once in a while, but if you're terrible, it's not going to be fun. Here, it's much easier to, I don't know, set yourself with whatever group you're playing with. And because everyone's playing together so often, it ends up, like, matching skill levels and the game is still enjoyable. Because, yeah, you may not be running a tier one standard deck, but it doesn't matter because everyone's running a, you know, Sapperling deck or Zombies or something like that. Yeah. That's what lets a lot of people stay with the game throughout their, you know, it kind of evolves and takes as much time as they can allow it to.
It's also the reason that, you know, in my opinion, paper cards will never be replaced by, you know, by Magic Online is because you can't recreate that social experience that you can with physical cards like you can with Magic Online. It's just not the same. It's a completely different beast.
I completely agree with that.
People are way antisocial online. They'll say shit to you online that they would never say to your face.
But yeah, I mean, you look at like, you know, one of the closest comparisons to Magic right now would be like Hearthstone. I mean, do we think Hearthstone's going to be around in 10 years? Like, and even if it is when you step back into it, is it going to be at all like it was, you know, when you started? No. And it's the social aspect of Magic that doesn't change, even though the cards do. And I think that's what's important.
But still the social aspect, I mean, over time, that social aspect would be closed by technological gaps. You know, who knows, we could have streaming where you're with your partner. You got Facebook now that by Oculus Rift, what if you're able to be with your friends together in a virtual room and you're able to hear each other's voices? That bridge can be gapped. I mean, that gap can be bridged or whatever the fuck.
I don't know. We already have that, don't we? I mean, we have
what are we doing right now?
If you use Google Hangouts, like, that is so easy. You just crack open your browser and you're webcamming. All you need to do is point your laptop down at the table and you can play a game of Magic across video chat, right?
Yeah.
Has anyone done that before? Cause I feel like I should be using it more often.
It's a thing. We're not all in the same room right now. Like, you gonna tell me this isn't social?
But you think about it, that's all true, and paper Magic's never been more popular.
No, I don't think, paper Magic could ever be replaced on that aspect, and that's one thing that I do like it, even though I mostly play, you know, Moto, but like, when I did that team sealed and I played with, Scotty and, Maddie, like, you know, that getting down in the trenches together, it's just like, there's a feeling that you can't replace elsewise. I mean, it's good if you got Moto when you got a friend and you guys like, you know, draft together, like me and my brother will draft, or I did a queue with one of my coworkers and we were going over the picks, like, you know, there's that aspect on it too. So there's different ways of going about it. And I definitely think, definitely schools, news. Oh, I fucked up.
What are you talking about?
What are you?
Someone wrote schools, news in the chat. Hey, I'm going around in circles. This is not my best performance.
I don't think you're high enough. I think that's the problem.
Hence my pick of the week.
All right. Well, we're done with that topic. Let's move on to the picks of the week.
It's time for the pick of the week.
All right, Marcel, you want to lead off?
How about we let our guests lead off?
All right, Elliot, go for it.
All right, so that was me on Scooze. I cannot find... My cursor is not pointing to the right row in Google Docs. So, my pick of the week is Scavenging Ooze. Scavenging Ooze has been eternal playable ever since they printed it in the first Commander decks, and it hit $40 at one point just based on legacy demand. Hopefully I'm remembering that right. It's dropped all the way down to $8. And, you know, it's in a core set, so I don't think there are many copies out there as there would be if it was in the first set of a block like Theros.
Right.
And so, you know, it still sees legacy play. It definitely still sees modern play. And I think what's really notable about it in modern is, it's actually one of the cards that does go toe to toe with Tarmogoyf. I mean, you'll be facing down a 5/6 Tarmogoyf and then you drop the ooze and then you eat up the graveyard and all of a sudden your scavenging ooze is way bigger than their Tarmogoyf and you gain a couple life in the process. And it also, it fills the gap left by Deathrite Shaman where you just need a little bit of incidental, graveyard interaction in your main deck. Because there are so many modern decks out there that base some of their power or all of it off of the graveyard. And so whether you're playing against Storm or a combo deck like Birthing Pod, Scavenging Ooze is relevant and going to be relevant in most of your matchups. And at $8, I really feel like it's probably hit its bottom. I mean, it gets standard play, but the fact that it's only $8 even while getting play in all three major formats is really impressive to me. I can't see it getting any lower. I also don't see them reprinting it anytime soon. They did the promo, the BioBox promo, or no, it was the Duels of the Planeswalkers promo. Yes. And, you know, they put it in a core set. I don't think they're going to touch it anytime soon. So this is probably as low as it's going to go. I could see it hitting $20 next Modern season. You really just can't lose. It's not going to go any lower than this. And so if you want to get rid of them later, it's going to be a great card. You'll be able to trade away, no problem.
So let's talk about why it got this low. Because, I mean, people obviously know how powerful it is and it was. You know, do you think there were so many that can hit the market that it kind of left the collective, like, financial psyche and it's just kind of, you know, just fallen that low? Or do you think this is just kind of, you know, where it was going and it's going to slowly rise?
I don't see it spiking anytime soon. I don't see it going any lower. But I think it's because Standard is really, really weird this year. You know, we saw a bunch of cards that no one was expecting to see play in Standard become staples because of the devotion mechanic. And on the flip side, there are a bunch of cards that everyone expected to see play, like Fleece Mane Lion, Advent of the Worm, all these multicolored cards from Ravnica block that didn't get to see play because devotion was sort of stifling, you know, well, it still is stifling this whole time. I'm not playing much Standard right now, but I think that's most of the reason that you're seeing low demand for scavenging use right now. It's in the market because it's in a Standard set, but, and it's even though it's getting Standard play, it's not in multiple decks, right? It's in the green red deck and is it in the dredge deck? It's not in the dredge deck.
No.
Of course the dredge deck wouldn't want it. You should play it against the dredge deck, right?
But yeah, I mean, so I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah, that's a good pick on. Moto has been picking up a little bit, but it's still $6 and yeah, I don't see that as a bad pickup at all. People have forgotten about it.
Cool. It's a good one.
Yep.
All right. So my pick of the week is going to be coming proxy from Polish Tamales. He actually mentioned this to me and I was like, that's actually a pretty good pick right there. It's Mark of Asylum. This is from Conflicts. If you do not know what this card is, don't be surprised. It's probably one of those obscure cards. But this is an enchantment for one and a colorless and to prevent all non-combat damage that would be dealt to creatures you control. He was mentioning that Anger of the Gods is a heavily played spell and just crushes many decks, and this completely shuts down Anger of the Gods. Also, Modern is known as the Lightning Bolt format, and this completely turns Lightning Bolt into just Lava Spikes. So I don't know. There's potential for this. I mean, it's completely bulk online. It's 5 cents in papers, 50 cents. It's from Conflux, which is a middle set in the Lara block. So Modern Spikes are crazy. This is a card that has a potential too. Who knows? This could go somewhere. So I think this is a decent pickup. I went my piece of money on that.
I like that because it's, you know, like I said, basically bulk, hard to lose on it, even if it goes nowhere.
Fair. My pick of the week, also kind of an obscure one, though a very played card. I think with this recent spike we've seen in Jataxian Probe and a couple of other commons lately, I think Spell Pierce is one that really has a chance to get there and not just, you know, go from being 50 cents to a dollar, but instead being, you know, in this $5 range common. I mean, this card gets played across both formats very heavily, and it's only been printed once, and I don't see a reason that, given the fact that these Modern Master staples are seeing just as much play, are coming back to, you know, the prices they were at before they had been reprinted. There's no reason that something that's only been printed once can't get up to that same point. And Zendikar is pretty old at this point. We're seeing plenty of other cards from that era or newer that are becoming worth enough money.
I don't think you're wrong with that. How dangerous, I guess, is it, Ryan, to spec on commons since, you know, they, especially something like Spell Pierce, it's, I mean, it hasn't been reprinted, but if it did get reprinted at common, it would obviously just completely tank. I mean, how risky is it to get in on commons?
I don't think it's that risky. You can usually find them on a lot of the auction sites and stuff for pretty much the price you're going to get on them on a buy list, because a lot of people just put them up there. Like, you can go on TCG or go on eBay and probably find play sets of them for under $2. And I think that you're not going to have any problems getting rid of them at that price, even if the card doesn't really go anywhere. I mean, somewhere down the line, somebody's going to want one and they're going to trade it off for you for a dollar at worst. Like, right. I don't know that I would go buy hundreds of copies, but I think, you know, picking up them here and there, or anytime you see them in a binder, if at all, getting them to throw in is very easy. And if nothing else, at the very least, when you're picking your bulk, you know, instead of putting them on the first buy list you see them on, just let them sit aside for a month or two.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird to be talking about, you know, investing in commons, but you look at something like Serum Visions and it seems pretty realistic after looking at that.
Yeah. And I mean, Spell Pierce again hasn't been printed even with a promo yet, as far as I'm aware. And it's still only a dollar. And Serum Visions, there's probably about as many, there's probably not quite as many copies out there, even with the promo, but it can't be too far behind.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll go. I'm going to go with, Glimmer Void this week. The reason being is it's all just a little bit of movement going from basically $8 to $9, over the past month. But some of those other, basically we're seeing a trend of Modern Masters cards bouncing back. You know, we saw Bloodman do it. We saw Cryptic Command do it. Been doing Quicks doing it. You know, it's on and on. The list goes on with all the Modern Masters cards bouncing back. Well, Affinity, you know, while, you know, there, it certainly has its detractors, it is still a good starting point for a lot of people in Modern because, I mean, yes, it's not autopilot, like, you know, kind of like people deride it as it takes some skill, but it's also a very forgiving deck because it's simply so powerful. So it makes a starting point for a lot of people. Glimmer Void hasn't really gone anywhere. That said, it's completely bottomed out and is now starting to rise off of the bottom. So there's basically no reason to think that it won't continue to trend up.
Corbin, I think you have some really good points there about trends in Modern. I'm not sure if I'm super excited about Glimmer Void in particular. I see it alongside Blinkmoth Nexus, both being printed in Mirrodin Block, then both getting reprinted in Modern Masters. And so I think Glimmer Void being a sometimes four of, mostly a three of, and Blinkmoth Nexus being an auto four of, I'm not sure if I like Glimmer Void a huge amount to go up. But what you point out about budget decks in Modern is budget decks in Modern disappear quickly as soon as people find out they're viable. And so Affinity proving itself to be a budget deck, but then one of the best decks in the format has quickly become not so budget, even though it doesn't have fetch lands. But, you know, you've seen the trajectory for Living End, Ad Nauseam, the Azusa Primeval Titan bounce land deck. All of those decks became not so budget pretty quickly, when they had their power cards, identified and those went up multiple percent. So I like the philosophy behind the Glimmer Void pick. Find the budget Modern decks and buy them because eventually everyone else will get turned onto them and they'll just go up from there if they have any sort of even tier two playability.
Yeah, I mean, and in this case, it kind of hits on that because, like you said, it is sort of looked at least traditionally as a budget deck, even if it's, you know, not necessarily true anymore. But it really is just it's a good starting point. It's similar to that, like Merfolk is a good starting point, and that it turns guys sideways. You know, of course, there's more play to that, but it's a lot less intimidating to people getting in to turn guys sideways than it is to, you know, memorize 17 different pod combinations that they could find in the one situation they needed, or, you know, all the intricacies of Storm, stuff like that.
I have to say that's what I thought when I think Affinity was one of the first decks I targeted to build this last year and finished it because, you know, it didn't have any fetch lands and it was pretty easy to get together. But yeah, Arcbound Ravager math, that's yeah. Actually really hard. So it looks easy until you try playing it and then you realize you can't play it perfectly. So
I mean, it's certainly, like I said, there's certainly a lot to it, but on the other hand, it does appeal to people too because it has the oops I win factor. Like I said, it's very easy to play the deck at 90%, you know, even if you can't play it at 100%. Which in the case of a deck that just has so much brute power, just what it attracts a lot of people to it. Because you do just get those hands where you're pretty much just going to run over anybody. All right, so let's move on. Jason, what do you got?
Well, I got like a bad one and a worse one, but that's okay. So Tropical Island, right? I spent the last couple weeks just assuming Tropical Island was 300, because why not? It doesn't get played in every deck that Volcanic Island does, but it doesn't get played in half the decks. Like Tropical Island, I think, is due a price correction. Like I realize that Tundra and Underground Sea and Vol could get played a little bit more, but still, there's no reason why Tropical Island is the cheapest when it's in Rug Delver and it's in all the bug decks.
Hey, does that card make blue mana?
Does it make blue mana? Let me think. Yeah, it makes fucking blue mana. Okay? Yeah,
it's got Island in the name, right?
It's got Island in the name. It's going to get banned when Island gets banned, right? So, you know, that's a... It's due a price correction. Anybody that thinks it's not due a price correction is just wrong. So they are like $125 to $150 now. Even if they don't hit $300, they're not $125. So if it doubles to $250, which is less than Volcanic Island, but still, you know, more than it is now, I think it's due a price correction. Like, I don't – and people on Twitter are talking about, hey, talk me out of spending $10,000 on these. So Trop is going to go up. Like, it's not because I said so. It's not because I wrote something on QS. It's not because of this podcast. Trop's going to go up because the price is wrong right now. Like, I said the same thing about Bayou when Bayou was like 45 and it was getting played as much as Trop, and Trop was twice as much. Like, the price is wrong. It's going to go up. So, like, the buy-in's real high, so it's not the greatest pickup for everybody, unfortunately, which is why I say it's a bad one. So since that's not great, because people are like, yeah, I don't have $500 to go buy a bunch of Trops. Yeah, sorry. So one tip I got on Twitter was a follower named Lengthy Zemet told me to check the spread on Eladamri's Call everywhere. And I'm looking and I'm seeing 25 to 30% everywhere. So I don't know if he knows something I don't know. So that's a card to watch. I'm not saying buy Eladamri's Call. I'm saying check the spread on Eladamri's Call. And if it goes below 25%, which is what it is now, that's movement. Now, obviously, you can't check the spread on every card ever, so this would be something to just spend a minute a day. And if you see movement on this, that's movement. So
retail, it's gone up steadily recently. So,
if the spread increases, that means the dealers think that the new higher price is a good price. So absolutely, you know, I think if the spread goes down, then the dealers think the new price is correct. So. It's just one of those cards that, like, it's real useful in casual EDH, cube, that sort of thing. Like, it's a good tutor, and they're not making any more plane shift stuff. The fact that it's called Eladamri's Call means it's kind of safe from reprint, too. Like, flavor-wise, they can't just jam that in another set. So those are all factors that lead me to believe that if I want to say I want to move in at 15% spread. So that's about where I want to look at it. So 25% still a little high. I'm checking Trader Tools. I'm checking Troll and Toad. I don't have a Star City account, so I can't check there because that's all real secret info. But you know, all the places I typically check, I'm seeing the spread around 25%. So anything around 15, I'm thinking you might want to look to move in.
All right. Let's
bam. Bam.
Bam.
You don't get to say bam after my pick of the week.
It's my pick of the week now. I took it over.
Is that how that works?
It's a spectral possession.
Marcel's going to edit the podcast.
Exactly. So, hey, so did you guys see the new dual deck, Speed versus Cunning?
Speed versus, I bet there's going to be some Ace creatures and some blue creatures.
Fires of Yavimaya for the 30th time and make it a penny.
That's going to be Hell Rider.
Yeah. I mean, probably.
It's going to be Ball Lightning. It's going to be a foil Ball Lightning on one side and a foil Prodigal Sorcerer on the other.
No, a Bullshock Sorcerer. That was the one with haste. Hmm.
So
he's
does
not,
this mean
he's not speed, he's cunning? He represents cunning. The blue cerebral using his mind to kill the Ball Lightning.
I see. Sure.
What's the cunning part, guys? Is this Snapcaster?
Ooh, the $20 MSRP.
He's the Mind Sculptor. Who's more cunning than Jace? Jace versus Jace.
Cunning Spark Mage is more cunning than Jace.
You know what, Marcel?
Well, see, so.
Which is funny.
The last time we had a dual deck that wasn't a Planeswalker versus, it was Heroes versus Monsters, right?
Yeah, and so that was salty garbage.
Maybe we'll get a preview card or something.
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
Probably how they have it set up. That's definitely going to be how they set it up. They've done that the last two fall dual decks. So I'm sure we'll get a preview card in foil promo art on the front cover, right?
So yeah. Are the Eldrazi speedy or cunning?
No.
Neither.
They're cunning.
Are they? Kozilek. Yeah. Not Kozilek. Who draws a bunch of cards?
Kozilek draws cards.
Kozilek draws cards.
That's very cerebral. He just comes into play and you draw four.
No.
You just cast a card. He could get countered and you still draw four. Like, is that not cunning or not? There's nothing speedy about that whatsoever either. None of the Eldrazi have haste. Yeah. I mean, you could say Emrakul has haste and
he ends the game real quick. Like the game's speedy. If they resolve an Emrakul, you kind of go, "Whoop, game two."
Depends.
Are we getting Guild of Drake?
Guys, I think this is probably the best possible way to guess what cards are in it.
It is.
I'm reading the description. I have no idea what's in this.
You know what we do know? So, we do know that if you buy Commander 2013 repacks, you are getting two Mindseizes.
Yep.
Awesome.
So they're doing another run in Commander 2013, making good on the promise that they made when they said it would not be a limited print run. Only instead of when the original ones came out, the only option was to get one of each of the five Commander decks. Well, now they're sending two Mindseizes. Which is the Grixis one with True Name Nemesis in it. For every five you buy, and you have to buy in the boxes of five, you get two of those and then three of the others. So this is a very clear, you know, hey, we don't want more $40 cards out of Commander boxes. So here's another run of them. Take all your True Name Nemesis.
Every time you see the movie Mystery Men, it's Nemesis.
Nemesis, we want them to be $15. So, I mean, I guess what's your guys' take on this? Like, on the one hand, it's nice that Wizards is fulfilling their stated goal of not having to be a limited print run. But what do you think this will do to the other ones that aren't, Mindseizes?
Doesn't matter. They were sitting on shelves before and they'll continue to sit on shelves. Like, I'm not happy about more of the Power Hunger getting out there because that was my pick for the Heavenly Inferno of 2013. And if you look on the EDH subreddit, which is like the only place I get EDH news because I can't bring myself to go to any other website that talks about EDH, that's sort of being borne out. Like, some people really like the Alluro, like building around Alluro or Sidri or whatever the artifact chick is. But, I mean, for the most part, everyone's like, oh, yeah, Prosh is where it's at. Like, some people build Shattergang Brothers, too. Like, that Power Hungry is the deck. Like, the Mindseizes is, hooray, some people like Nekusar. That's the way that it diverges most from the whole, like, counterpunch slash political puppets argument, because Nekusar is actually a really good general. But, and the Naya one isn't another Mirror Masters, because the Naya one just sucks, and the Mirror Masters one's really good. If you look at the generals I have now, I have two decks out of that Mirror Masters deck. You know, I've got Anamar and Riku. So, I still think that the Naya one is just garbage, and there's not much like printing more is going to do. And I still think that the Gen 1 is underrated by the finance community, but really being scooped by the EDH community. So do you think
these are going to lower the values of these cards? Do you think these decks are now going to go down in value, or do you think they're going to go up in value now that there's going to be less copies and now Mindseizes is going to be completely worthless in the long term?
I think Mindseizes is the only one whose price will be affected.
So what happens to True Name Nemesis? Because that's clearly one of the big driving factors here. It's, you know, $25 to $30 most places now. Is this going to be a $5 card? Is this going to be a $25 card? What do you guys think?
15 to 20 seems about right. And I think that, you know, there's just going to be enough copies for everyone, and they're not going to do another reprint of True Name Nemesis and some other set like some people may suspect
it. It really depends what, if Star City wants this to be a $30 card, then Star City will make this a $30 card by putting it on their buy list for $19. Like, it doesn't matter how many of these they print. Like, it's not super cost effective to buy, and a lot of retail outlets are charging $45-$50 for the Mindseize deck, even though they're getting them two at a time now, just because they don't want speculators coming in and buying all of them, you know, off the street. So, I think if it's not super cost effective to buy this and be stuck with a bunch of cards that, like, even the Baleful Strix isn't worth that much anymore. I don't think it's going to do much to the price if people that are heavily invested right now want the price to stay high. Like, I don't think it's going to tank the price below maybe like 25-30%.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it hits 20, and I think that's probably a pretty reasonable level for it.
Well, think about it. If you're an LGS, right, even though you know you're getting two Mindseizes, you're paying whatever the store gets charged. They get, like, maybe they pay 15 a deck, right? So they pay 15 a deck times five. That's $75. They know they're going to sell the two Mindseizes immediately, and they're going to sit on the other three. So do you really want to spend $75 to snap make 60? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting, too, because True Name is actually trended downwards, like, $5 to $7. I believe before the, like, back since in February, so before this, you know, was even public news. So I think all in all, all signs point to True Name being 20 or below here in a couple months.
What about you, Elliot? What do you think?
Okay. why do we care about True Name Nemesis being $25 to $30 when Tropical Islands are about to be $250? Tundras are $300, or I haven't checked dual land prices lately, but these are not a barrier to entry for anyone in playing Legacy. If you're playing True Name, you're playing duels, and you're spending, you know, 1K, 2K on your mana base just to cast your True Name Nemesis. I mean, I'm not at all concerned about any precedent set about printing Legacy cards anywhere outside of Standard. Yeah.
They
were $30 though, and you've had them forever, never sold them and kept them to play with. Like, dual lands are only a barrier to entry if you don't already have them. Like, I sold a playset of Tropical Islands for like $110 back in 2006. So somebody bought those trops, and somebody's like, wow, I paid $110 for a set of trops, and now they're $150 a piece. That's pretty crazy how things have happened in 8 years. Like,
yeah, but you're talking about an extremity. Most people, that was actually a very profound statement, and I think you're not recognizing it.
No, but I'm with you.
No, I think Jason and I are on the same page. I mean, so Legacy can only be played by so many people, which is the number of dual lands out there, you know, divided by four. You know, after you subtract however many have been damaged or put through the laundry or lost or, you know, they're still sitting in someone's attic. But I think what's happened over the last couple of years is Star City is popular as Legacy. There's actually a place to play it. I know there's no place to play it in Portland. There's maybe one LGS out of five that are within a reasonable distance of me that has an occasional Legacy night. Maybe Portland's the exception, but, it's really hard to play Legacy, unless you're looking at Star City. And maybe you guys are all in another different part of the country. Marcel, you're also on the West Coast. Can you play Legacy?
I do not know.
Legacy does not get played in Oklahoma, I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
I play online. I don't play paper cards at all, really.
It does in Michigan, but only on the east side of the state. And there's like, you know, it's pretty niche-y.
I think what we're seeing with Legacy prices going up is that the cards are being played. And there are only so many cards left in circulation that aren't being played, that aren't being sucked up by people who actively want to play Legacy. And it's just a smaller and smaller portion of the cards that are in circulation because they've finally come out from all the LGSs in Portland. I've noticed all the dual lands in the last week have disappeared off LGS shelves when usually they just don't sit there and don't move because no one plays Legacy in Portland. They're finally gone because they moved up. And so they're getting into circulation. Eventually they'll find their way to somebody who's either playing an open series, or in Star City's hands. And that'll just be its own little self-contained ecosystem. And, people play Legacy if you have them. And then if you want to pay to get in, you can pay to get in and you're in forever. But, it's just Legacy is filled up.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing with going back to the Commander decks is, you know, Wizards can't control the price of dual lands. So it kind of is what it is. But I don't think they like their Commander decks getting bought by Legacy players for their True Name Nemesis, you know? So they want to, they'd rather flood the market with True Name Nemesis so that the Commander players are actually the people getting the Commander decks, which makes sense on their part.
I don't know, cause I think, you know, the rest of the Commander deck ends up in a binder. So, you know, the people can't get the whole deck, but they can like trade for the stuff that's in the deck that isn't that. So, you know, if they're thinking about a Legacy player buying a 100 card deck for one card is those 99 cards are going to be totally undervalued. So that's probably the best way to get your Nekusars from a Legacy player that just busted that $35 deck for that $50 card.
Well, that's good. That's good for the people who are trying to build their Commander deck from scratch. But like, if you think of a new player who wants to come up to the store on a Saturday when people play Commander, like, and he has nothing, he probably, like, the first thing he does isn't trade for a Nekusar and some other stuff from someone else and then start to build his deck and come back weeks later. Like, you want to get started. So, like, I mean, those decks lose a lot of, you know, I don't know if value is the right word, but they lose a lot of utility if they're not able to just buy them off the shelf. And if somebody wants to buy Nekusar off the shelf and play it, but they can't because a speculator came and took the True Name Nemesis and put it in his closet, then I think that's not accomplishing what Wizards wants. But yeah, all right, so let's move on from that. You guys have anything else you want to touch on this week?
No, I think that's it for me. We've beaten the Modern and Legacy stories to death.
Well, we can talk about Nekusar a little bit more because it made another card go up.
Do it.
You notice we talked about on the actual podcast, not the after hours we're doing right now, In the actual podcast, we said that two different printings of Teferi's Puzzle Box have spiked. Now, this was a card I identified a couple weeks ago when I said, hey, Nekusar's making stuff go crazy. When's a change did it? I bet Puzzle Box is next. Sure enough, Puzzle Box. So could Reforge the Soul be next? Could Windfall be next? I don't know, but it seems like stuff in this Nekusar deck is just going nuts, because even though it's been printed multiple times, stuff's spiking. So Puzzle Box is a card that's good in EDH anyway. So, you know, it jacks people up if they are trying to sculpt their hand, and, you know, it adds an element of chaos, which I think is really fun. I'm a big fan of Puzzle Box, and like I said, in Montreal, they were in quarter bins. People were talking about, wow, I'm in for $1.50 on Puzzle Box. I feel pretty good about it hitting five. I'm like, dude, I'm in for a quarter. I feel great. So, man, Reforged the Soul could be next. Who knows? But I think that's a card with justification. I think Food Chain. I want to talk real briefly about something I've seen a lot in the fledgling finance community, and that's a technique that I'm calling justification after the fact. When something goes up and you say, well, it went up for these reasons, this makes sense to me. If you can't learn anything from that situation that you can apply to another card and get ahead of the next spike, then what you've done is just rationalize the spike that might not have gone up for a good reason. The very first card I made money on speculating on, when I joined Quiet Speculation as a writer, I had been running for a week and an email blast went out and said, hey, they just spoiled this card called Mist Hologriffin, and people are already talking about A, pitching Mist Hologriffin to Force of Will. Okay, cute. But B, playing Mist Hologriffin, sacrificing it to Food Chain and getting infinite mana. So the fact that that deck was a thing like a couple years ago and never really went anywhere and now has popped up one copy in the top eight when there's been somebody playing it at every Legacy Open since then, you know, and the deck's, you know, it's never really done anything. The fact that Food Chain's back up now because of one Legacy top eight says to me a lot of people just saw it in the top eight and said, oh, I guess Food Chain's good. And then they said, oh, well, it's also played in EDH, therefore it can sustain this high price. I think that's the result of, bad analysis. I think that's bad speculation. And I think Food Chain is a really terrible card to buy. And I think you should definitely avoid justification after the fact. If you can't learn anything about Food Chain that you can apply to another card, then you haven't learned anything. And all you're doing is rationalizing a spike that was basically all hype and the card should not have gone up.
I mean, it's the same story with Space Nano. We've talked about it a million times, though.
Alluren,
yes. I mean, kind of the same story, right? A Fringe Legacy deck, something comes along, spikes the price. And that showed then that the new price doesn't always hold, even if it's an old card. I don't know if Food Chain will be the same way or not.
Food Chain's on its way back down. It's down like 20% or something like that.
Yeah, but I don't think – I think the lesson you take from Food Chain you apply forward is the same lesson you should have learned with Alluren if you're around then. Is it just because a card is Legacy playable and shows up from time to time doesn't mean it's just a card that's, you know, just never going to go down, because Alluren showed that these spikes can dissipate very quickly, even for a card that's really old and unlikely to be reprinted and is – part of a four of an Legacy deck, you know, so that doesn't insulate it from the other factors. So, like you said, I expect Food Chain to go more or less the same way, even if it ends up stabilizing a little higher than where it started.
I think it might, and like the EDH demand kept it where it was after it spiked the first time. That's like people that haven't been at this long enough to remember that don't realize. The price that it was before it just spiked this last weekend was because of EDH demand. EDH demand is not going to keep it where it is now. So if you say things like that, but you don't really understand what they mean, realize that you're only making other people money.
Guys, this may have been the longest after hours we've done.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, Elliot, thank you again for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I had a good time.
You just interrupted Corbin. I was pretty jacked up. Like, you come on our podcast, he's trying to thank you, and then you interrupt him.
If you interrupt, you're
Jason,
interrupting
you
Corbin is very rude.
Room,
so if you're already around interrupting me, you're fitting in very well.
I learned it from the best by listening to Brainstorm Brewery.
So where can they find you at? Where's your Twitter?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and practically nowhere else. My handle is Hackworth. And you should, if you're going to follow me, also follow my wife, MJ Scott. She tweets at MoxieMTG. She also has a Tumblr under the same name. She, along with Brainstorm Brewery, is on Gathering Magic every week. I don't write, so you just have to settle for Twitter for me.
Occasional pictures of you will appear in cosplay articles written by your wife, though.
I'm the photographer. I'm very rarely in front of the camera, and I think everyone recognizes why my wife is the one in front of the camera.
Wait, I did see a couple pics of you, so who took those?
10-second delay. It wasn't our 4-year-old, believe me. The camera was sitting on top of a chair, it was on top of a case of Jason vs. Raska dual decks, which was sitting on top of a laundry basket, which was sitting on top of a chair. That's what took that picture.
So that's what the Jace vs. Raska dual decks are good for.
Yes, they're good for about 6 inches.
So am I.
So what does Hackworth mean?
Hackworth, actually, I was randomly getting followed and tweeted at by someone who missed out on taking the username. It's a character from a Stevenson novel, Diamond Age.
Oh, really? I thought you were trying to hack Worth Warport's account.
No. There's also a magical hack or a couple magical hacks around on Twitter, too. So there's some hacks and Hackworths out there, but I got Hackworth. I'm happy with it.
And so you're from Portland, so you're going to be doing a big with GP Portland.
Yeah, so, man, I am super excited about this summer. Everyone should come to GP Portland, mostly because Marcel will be there, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So there's Pro Tour. I mean, I couldn't be happier, right? We had a GP 3 years ago, then we had a GP last summer, and now this is like dream come true. We got a Pro Tour in Portland coming up this summer, and then a week later a GP. I'm going to have to take like a week and a half off of work. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. And then they finally, they reopened Pro Tours to the public. So I get to go down there and bird the Pro Tour, and then come back the next weekend and play in a team sealed GP. It's going to be a blast. So I think everybody on Twitter has mentioned coming to GP Portland. It's a really good idea. Everybody should be there.
So they announced that the PTs are open to the public. Where was this? I didn't hear
that. That was at the last PT. They had a post about it hiding somewhere on the mothership. It was one of those posts that you couldn't find someone linked to. They call it like spectacle or something, where they had birding set up at the venue in Valencia. Mm. Did you guys also see that article?
I did not.
Okay.
Oh man.
Yeah, apparently they're open to the public again. I'm sure Helene will call us out if that's not actually the case, but I will be at the venue and I'll fight my way in even if they close them back off. I mean,
we'll just get press badges. That's what we'll do.
I might have to go to the PT now. Oh, this might change plans.
I know. Come up a week early, man.
Oh, we'll see. This might have to go down like this. Oh, Portland may be very great.
It will be.
This is going to be better than Vegas. We'll call it now.
Yeah, you said that about Montreal, and you were wrong as all fucking get out.
I did not say it was going to be better in Vegas. I said it was going to be like Vegas 2.0, which it really wasn't. But
okay, so
2.0
will be better than
now
Vegas
new
because
and not
the
improved.
Food will be better, but it won't be better than Vegas because I don't know if Corset Sealed can hold up to Modern Masters. But we'll see. I'll still be playing.
There's that
Corset Sealed. I can't wait.
It's Team Sealed. Team Seal.
If it were Two-Headed Giant, okay, I'd be a little bit more excited. Two-Headed Giant's the best format that they got rid of.
Is Team Sealed after the PT, so there's going to be a lot of top-caliber teams there. They're just going to stick around.
What, like you, Scotty Mack, and Maddie Studios?
No, I'm talking about like the Pantheon's probably going to break up. You're going to have Sam Black, John Finkel, and Kai Booty on a team. And you'll be like, oh, yeah, you're just going to get steamrolled. But there's going to probably be some high caliber teams. Cause I mean, they're all, the PT is all going to be there in Portland. So they're just going to linger around and go to the GP afterwards as a team win. So why not have the most fun you can with the team limited event? Like you're going to see some interesting teams there. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, and now I understand that that's who probably took we had a flat we were looking at or, what was it? What do they call it? Lofts. And it just got booked up, and now I realize it was the two weekends that got booked up was the two pro tour weekends. So now it makes sense. It was probably one of the pros that took that awesome place that we're going to have for all the parties we're going to be at.
You'll find another one, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure there will still be parties there. We just won't be invited because we aren't dressed appropriately.
Well, let's tune in next week. This is Brainstorm Brewery. And thank you again, Scott. Elliot. Sorry.
It happens all the time.
He's a firsty. It's confusing.
Yeah. All right. See, thank you, Elliot.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Later. Tune in next week, everyone. We will have another 2-minute cast. Absolutely not.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.